FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is November 19th, 2018. Well, you know, the year is rapidly coming to a close. The dysfunctionality of society, of local governments, of every phase of our existence coming more and more to the forefront. Hey, as always, if you like, be a part of the show and email us. Email address is kl@kerrylutz.com. So you know things are getting bad when the head of New Jersey's State Senate, Mr. Sweeney, says we can't tax our way out of it. We must reform pension plans and government spending and government operations to reflect reality. What happened to him? Did he get a wake-up call? Did Tony Soprano dump off a load of fish on his front lawn? I wonder. Hey, and right now to discuss that and a lot more, a lot of your questions, is our good friend John Rubino, dollarcollapse.com. John, happy Monday.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, the year's almost over. We're going out with a bang, it looks like.
Yeah.
Dow's down another 400 points this morning. Tech stocks are tanking. So it seems like this credit crunch that you and I have been talking about for such a long time might finally be starting. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out, especially with tax loss selling and then the January effect and the Fed meeting again in December. We got a lot of things going on.
Hey, but not to mention,
to address the local government thing that you brought up. Yeah, that is interesting when even the Democrats are aware of the pension bomb, you know, the pension crisis that's evolving, and aren't automatically saying we need to raise taxes to address it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and you know, it's a big wake-up call. And, you know, when we see the markets, what they're doing, dollar is still holding strong. But we've seen oil, WTI, West Texas Intermediate, has dropped to just $56 the barrel. I've even seen the decrease at the pump. Have you noticed that, John?
I haven't noticed gas going down yet. But that always happens with the lag, especially out here. But yeah, oil has been on a roller coaster this year. It went to a multi-year high earlier in the year, and now it's heading for a multi-month low. And see, the thing about oil is that it's risky at either extreme because there are so many derivatives and leveraged loans and junk bonds attached to U.S. oil drillers that any kind of volatility, because each of these contracts has somebody on each side, right? There is a counterparty betting that oil is going up and a counterparty betting oil is going down. So either way, you create a lot of risk if there's volatility in the oil market. What those guys want is for it to stay at $70 a barrel and just sit there. So all the contracts work out and they can plan their production based on stable costs. And this kind of volatility makes life hard for everybody. And in the financial markets, it creates a huge amount of risk in the junk bond market, especially. So we'll see what happens. But if it drops much further, you know, I posted an article the other day quoting an oil expert that said, you know, at $60 a barrel, it's not an issue. But if it drops to 55 or below, that's when the reaction kicks in. Well, it dropped to 55 or below just lately here. Mm-hmm. So we could see some action in the oil market or in oil-related derivatives and loans that will catch people off guard. You know, people aren't expecting energy-related junk bonds to blow up, mm-hmm. obviously. And if they do, then that's one more thing. You know, anything that happens now, you've got to add it to all the other stuff that is happening or is prospective, like the pension thing. Add energy junk bonds to what is clearly turning into a pension crisis, which should be added to the European political chaos and financial chaos with Italy and Angela Merkel maybe being out pretty soon. Sounds and Brexit like and everything, yeah. and add that to the trade war between the U.S. and China. That's really affecting global imports and exports and causing a lot of trouble, especially in China with companies that have borrowed a lot of money in dollars based on the premise that they'd be able to sell a lot of stuff to us. So anyhow, it goes on and on. So any new thing that happens needs to be added to the list of all the old things that are in the process of blowing up. We've got an interesting year ahead of us, Gary. That's pretty much all you can say about this right now.
Hey, not to mention these raging wildfires, which are due to man's negligence, because look, there's only one industry, you know and I know, that could care less about the forest. They might not always have the best interest of endangered species close, near, and dear to their hearts, but it's the logging industry. They're the only ones that care. The government might care, but they're unable to do it. The environmentalists are not into forest management, and it's a simple matter. The more crap you leave on the ground there, the more fuel you leave for the fire. When the fire starts, it's going to be that much worse. In addition to which, we mentioned this last week, more and more people living in harm's way because they want to get away from everybody, right? They want to get away from the rat race. And and they wind up in the talk about going from the frying pan. Bad pun, but they are literally in the fire now.
Well, yeah. We've got that going on both coasts right now where, you know, you take a place that's really nice, but prone to natural disasters, and then, you know, give it a couple of decades in which there aren't as many as the usual number of natural disasters. And then a lot of people move there, not realizing that really serious things happen there. And at a minimum, your insurance is going to get much more expensive. And, you know, that's the best case scenario. And there are much, much worse case scenarios, as everybody's finding out right now. Mm-hmm. And the cost has to be borne by somebody. If you move a million people into a place and they all buy houses and cars and you build roads and you have sewer systems and you have electrical wires, you know, you have the infrastructure of human civilization there, then when that natural disaster that is recurring, that you knew was going to happen, but it just hadn't happened as much lately, finally hits, the cost is immense. It's what, $8 to $10 billion for just these forest fires or the brush fires in California. And they're a recurring theme now. California fires are getting more and more common and more serious with no real end in sight. On the East Coast, hurricanes are getting bigger and more frequent and more destructive, just as we've moved millions of people into Hurricane Alley. So you can think of this as an unfunded liability, something that is a big cost that's looming out there that we haven't put any money away for, and add that to all the other unfunded liabilities out there. So again, one more thing to worry about in a world with many, many things to worry about.
But with no shortage of things to worry about. You know, what's amazing is that they're talking about it could be $100 billion or more worth of damage. A lot of it, the homes that have been destroyed, particularly, they're going to be insured for the most part, because especially if there's mortgages on them, you can't have a mortgage without casualty, fire and theft insurance. The government's infrastructure issues, no, that's probably not going to be insured. Although the government's physical plant like buildings, cars, etc., that got destroyed, that will be covered. but a large portion will be uncovered. And you know who's going to be making up the difference, John?
Taxpayers.
Taxpayer. Yeah. Hey, great guess. So, yeah. Hey, we got some questions here from you. From you people out there. We love getting your questions. Again, if you want to be a part of it, part of the show, the email address is kl@carrylutz.com. So one of them that I thought was really interesting, this one is from Richard D. And it says the subject line is miscellaneous. And it's written in all capital letters. So I don't know if he's upset with us, you, me, or the market. But here it is. I'm tired of hearing this nonsense. The paper price determines gold price. What? Do 100% of the people who buy paper not want physical gold? If 5% didn't get what they wanted, we'd be hearing about it. And what are the other 95% going to put up with this BS? Okay, so he's obviously a little emotional here. Why is a $4 trillion balance sheet bad for Fed? Can't they just hold till maturity and collect? Why do they have to reduce? It's an asset. Ha, ha, ha. How, with so many time bombs out there, we just talked about, the idiots haven't tripped one, which would cause a domino effect. These people are morons. Thanks. And thank you, Richard. So, physical being determined by the paper price. I guess you got to cover that one first, John.
Sure. The paper markets in gold and silver and in most other things are basically just casinos now, where people with a lot of money trade back and forth with each other based on their perception that prices might go up or their ability to push prices down or whatever. It has very little to do with the actual value of the underlying commodity. Eventually, though, that'll change. But right now, you do see the paper markets dominating the pricing of gold and silver. Eventually, the physical markets will win out, largely because we've got countries on the buy side now. China and Russia and India and a lot of other countries are entering the buying of gold and silver. And they're soaking up pretty much all the mine production of gold each year. Eventually, that will have an impact on pricing. And, you know, their demand will be the thing that determines the price. But right now, it's just a casino. And that's the way it is in so much of the financial markets right now. It has very little to do with the underlying value and everything to do with the positioning of the big guys playing with paper. Now, but the Fed's balance sheet. When the Fed buys assets, which is how they build up their balance sheet, in other words, they buy a bunch of bonds, they have to create a lot of new currency and pump that out into the system. So the Fed balance sheet is a proxy for the amount of money that's being created and tossed out into the banking system. The bigger the Fed's balance sheet, the more money they've created and put out there, which means the more inflation that they're building into the market. And when that inflation starts to actually show up, you know, it showed up in financial asset prices early on. In other words, stocks went up, real estate went up, bonds went up, and the Fed and the rest of the government don't count financial asset prices as inflation. So we had raging inflation because of all this new money that the Fed created and put out there, but we didn't count it as inflation. So it, you know, the average person thinks there's no inflation in the system. But lately, the kind of inflation that the government actually admits mm-hmm. to being inflation has yeah. started to pick up. Mm-hmm. Wages are increasing. The price of a lot of things in the marketplace that you and I buy day to day, those things are starting to go up. And so the Fed can't hide from the fact that it's created inflation anymore. Mm-hmm. And that is why it feels obligated to decrease its balance sheet. So what it's doing is it's letting the bonds that it holds run off. As they mature, it's just not replacing them. So it's cutting its balance sheet a little at a time. It'll take a long time at this rate to bring it down to zero, but it's heading that way at a kind of a steady pace now. And that equates to monetary tightening. So now we find out if this credit-addicted economy can handle tight rather than loose money. And what we're finding out is that maybe not, right? Home prices, because mortgage rates are up now because the monetary system is a little tighter. Home sales are starting to trail off. Home prices are dropping in a lot of formerly hot markets. The stock market has gotten incredibly volatile and it's down big again today. And you're seeing a lot of other signs out there, you know, industrial production, home building, car sales, where the economy seems to be slowing down.
Hey, not just car sales, but, you know, when you look at not just not new car sales, but used car sales, and the same with homes, new homes and pre-existing homes, both being sold off. You know, you're seeing that the inventory is increasing in housing and in cars, and you're seeing that that the prices are going to start going down. You know, they're going to have to pull a rabbit out of the hat here, John. I think the interest rate thing has gone about as far as it's going to go. Do you think they're going to keep raising rates?
Well, at some point, the stress in the economy will become undeniable. And the Fed will have to stop raising rates. And that's what everybody, especially in the precious metals markets, you know, everybody's been waiting for the Fed to stop raising rates and start cutting rates again, in the expectation that that will set off another bull market in precious metals. What's happened lately is that a couple of Fed talking heads, in other words, regional governors of the Federal Reserve, have come out and said, you know what, we're pretty close to the neutral rate. In other words, the rate at which it's not tight or loose. And that's the point where they will probably stop raising interest rates. So they're floating that trial balloon. They're saying, well, you know what? What if we stop raising rates here to see what the market does? And if the market keeps tanking like it is today, then they have to either use stronger language or actually act. In other words, they'll have to announce that they're not going to raise rates in December. See, everybody expects a rate increase in December. So that's when they get to actually do something substantive. If they skip that rate increase, then it's a sign that they're getting spooked by the financial markets flaking out the way they are right now, and that we're on our way to first the end of rate increases, the end of tightening, and second, the reintroduction of quantitative easing. And this all depends on what the financial markets do. If the markets, when the Fed doesn't raise rates in December, turn around, start rising again, then the Fed is probably still going to have to raise rates out there in the future. But if the markets keep tanking, then the Fed will have to do something more extreme on the easing front. In other words, that will force them to reintroduce QE. Right. So the markets will determine what happens with the Fed going forward. And I don't think they'll wait a long time this time. And in 2008, 2009, they waited too long to start easing. And so you had this huge crisis in the financial markets. Maybe they learned their lesson, or they think they learned the correct lesson from that, which is to start easing sooner rather than later. In which case, you know, in January and February, we're going to suddenly find ourselves in a world of easing monetary policy rather than tightening. And then it's off to the races for precious metals.
And the rest of the world, John, is already easing, correct?
Well, they never stopped easing.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. So, you know, you still got negative interest rates out there in Germany and Japan, and you've still got aggressive quantitative easing going on with the European Central Bank and with the Bank of Japan. And China, of course, is aggressively easy because they've got a financial crisis that's just brewing under the surface and has been for a while. So every time Chinese stocks drop, China eases one way or another. They ease bank reserve requirements, or they cut their interest rate, or they force their currency down, or they do something. So yeah, the rest of the world is not tightening the way the U.S. is. So the question becomes, does the rest of the world go our way, or do we go back to their way? And I think the financial markets now are pointing us towards easing again. And again, when that happens, It's hard to know what happens in the financial asset markets because stocks are objectively overvalued now. Bonds are wildly overvalued even after they've gone down a bit lately. The only thing that's cheap is precious metals.
Yes.
So it's possible that money flows into gold and silver, which makes them go up, which gets the momentum players excited. And then, you know, and then we're off to the races again. You know, we're back in 2010 when gold was the best performing asset in the entire financial world. And I think because gold and silver have been so beaten down that we can easily get a snapback that will look like that again. You know, whether it has legs or not depends on so many other things. But I think that there's an excellent chance that precious metals and precious metals mining stocks are the big winners in the next couple of years.
I think you are correct. And the mining stocks are so beaten down. And now with the tax loss selling that occurs every year, like clockwork in the People's Republic of Canada, they're just getting killed, and some of them are really high quality names that you need to know about and think about. So hey, we've got lots of sponsors in this sector, and any of them are good companies because we wouldn't take them otherwise, but there's some really good ones out there that you need to become aware of. So John, we're like heading, this is like deja vu all over again, isn't it? Is this what our future looks like, where we have this decade of fake prosperity, rising markets, but standard of living really doesn't improve. And then we have a crisis, and then it's a rinse and repeat. I mean, to some extent, we've been having that all along, but not like this, John. These markets so over-levered, so overhyped, and so susceptible to the systemic pressures that you and I both have identified repeatedly on the show. They haven't come to the forefront yet, but it looks like we're getting closer, doesn't it?
Well, there are two schools of thought out there. Yeah. This does feel like 2007, 2008 again, where you reach peaks in valuation and in debt levels, and then the volatility really starts, and the volatility is the prelude to a crash. That's what this feels like. But there are two schools of thought out there right now, at least. And one of them says that, you know what, the guys in charge have figured out how to keep this going forever. So, yeah, we'll have some ups and downs. But basically, any kind of a downturn in the financial markets will be met with easy money, which will reinflate the financial markets. And this can go on forever because it's in the interest of the powers that be to keep it going. You know, they have the ability to print all the money they want to. They can keep this going forever, and it's not in their interest for it to stop, so it won't stop. The other school of thought says, you know what? At some point, this has to blow up because the numbers become so unwieldy that there's just so much bad debt out there now that you can go ahead and throw all the, you know, as many trillions of dollars as you want to at the next crisis, and all you end up doing is crashing your currency. I'm in that camp, but of course I was in that camp last time around too. I didn't think we could do what we did in the last 10 years. So we'll see. But in the last 10 years, you know, after a debt-driven crash almost eviscerated the global financial system, all we did was double our debts. So now the numbers are vastly bigger. The amount of bad debt is much worse. The number of catalysts for the next crisis has multiplied almost exponentially. And the amount of money it will take to pull us out of this is commensurately bigger. In other words, if $10 trillion saved us last time, it's going to take 20 or 30 this time.
Well,
what does that mean for the financial markets and the currency markets? I think it finally shifts the crisis from stocks and bonds over to currencies. And then that's really the end of the game.
You know, John, if I didn't know better, I would say you sounded pessimistic.
Well, remember, Kerry, keep in mind, this is an investment thesis,
yes,
which is inherently optimistic. If they blow up the way it looks like they're going to, then real assets become extremely valuable in local currency terms. In other words, good farmland goes way up in value. A well-chosen rental house becomes much more valuable because the governments can't create more of those things. And precious metals, which are forms of money that the government can't create more of. And if the local currency blows up, old sound forms of money like gold and silver go through the roof historically. This isn't a new idea.
This isn't rocket surgery, right? Yeah, it's not rocket surgery.
It's completely historically consistent. You know, it's happened over and over again. Countries screw up their currencies. It's nothing unusual. And when they do, the value of the currency plunges and gold and silver go up dramatically in local currency terms. It's been happening since the days of the Roman Empire, and we're seeing it again, only on a global scale. The only thing that's different this time is that everybody's doing it, not just one country, which means the reckoning will be that much bigger. And the gold price will have to be that much higher to balance everything out. So I'm more optimistic than ever about precious metals and high quality precious metals miners. You can say it's a pessimistic worldview, or you can say it's an optimistic worldview, depending on what side of the story you're looking at.
What side of the trade
you're on. Pessimistic for the big systems out there and the people who depend on them, but it's very optimistic for the people looking for that next big short, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was housing last time around. It's probably currencies this time around.
Yeah, housing doesn't look so bad. I mean, it went back up in certain select markets, New York City, LA, you know, the high flyers, Miami. The housing stocks trading in the really high-end places much higher than it ever did before. But elsewhere, it hasn't yet reached its 2006 peak, 2007 peak. So it's probably not a bubble. But yeah, when you look at the debt, like I gave a talk at Jason Hartman's Profits in Paradise talk about bubbles. And, you know, there's such a great website about bubbles called thebubblebubble.com. And it's really the best site about bubbles. But we retraced half a dozen of them. Really, the stock market isn't a conventional bubble. You haven't had the exponential increase and then corresponding crash. But just because something isn't a conventional bubble, which I've made emphatically clear many, many times, John, doesn't mean it can't lose 70% of its value in the wink of an eye. Look at Bitcoin. And by the way, we would be remiss, John, if we didn't talk about Bitcoin. I think it's time for us to update our paper on it. I've got a thesis on this that I'm going to share in an upcoming article shortly, but this is the end of the world for cryptocurrencies. I'll just tease it that way. I don't think they have any role in the future. They won't be allowed to have a role in the future. They're going to be decimated very shortly, and I think this is the beginning of it.
$5,000 Bitcoin today.
What a steal, except what is it worth? You know? What do you think Bitcoin is worth? Because I sure as heck don't know. I can't figure it out. You know? Does anybody know what it's worth? No. Is it what a willing seller will take from a willing buyer? No, that is a little too simplistic to explain the machinations of this market. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. It's crashing, and there's a very good reason why it's crashing. You'll understand it more probably. I think within a year, all cryptocurrencies will cease to be viable stores of value. Just my opinion. I'll explain it in my upcoming article, and we're going to update our article to our crypto white paper. Hey, by the way, I've been getting a lot of requests from you guys out there for the medical hacks. You can get it for free, the list of 11 medical hacks that can save you thousands of dollars every year on your health costs, your health insurance, and everything else. You just have to go over to Financial Survival Network. You'll see on the upper right-hand corner, join our mailing list. You'll get the reports automatically along with our previous report, John and my previous report on cryptocurrencies and a really economical way to store your precious metals and have 24/7 access, actually to store them for free. Anyway, go check out John's site, sign up for his newsletter, and that website is dollarcollapse.com. That's dollarcollapse.com. Ours is financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for ours as well. You'll get the 11 medical hacks. I guarantee you, on pharmaceuticals, on drugs, it just saves you so much money. You can't even believe it. We're going to update that too. And otherwise, communicate with us, kl@carrylutz.com. We answer all. And we will read your questions when they're really astute and bring up really important issues that need to be addressed. A Twitter feed at Carrie Lutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. John, we will reconvene same time, same place next week. Happy Thanksgiving to you and to all of you out there. Hey, we love what we're doing. We're going to keep doing it till we either can't do it anymore or the government shuts us down, John.
One or the other.
Hopefully it'll be old age.
We are drifting into old age.
Yeah.
Talking about the end of the world here. Hope it comes soon so we can move on to optimistic themes.
Hey, I don't think there's a big demand out there, John, for podcasting by people that have dementia. Because it's kind of like...
Oh, excuse me. I think there's a lot of successful podcasters out there that's their shtick, it seems like.
They have dementia? Really? Well, I don't know. Well, then my whole opinion of audiences out there has to be reevaluated. But look, dementia, you know, God forbid, there but for the grace of God go I. But seriously, you do see, as you get older, your memory isn't as good. I mean, I'm thinking right now, John, of... learning Spanish, because I know that learning a language is one of the best ways you can deal with declining memory faculties in old age. Not that I'm old yet, but you know, as you age, your memory can decline because supposedly your brain shrinks. But if you subject it to constant exercise and challenges, I mean, I know I was taking this real estate exam and I noticed that for the month that I was studying leading up to it, my memory seemed to be much, much improved. Anyway, that's a story for another day. So just check out John's site, dollarcollapse.com, our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Go on to iTunes and you can subscribe right there. John, we'll catch up with you next week. Be well.
Thanks, Carrie. You too.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.